The Weird Darkness Radio Show's Sudden Death Overtime.
Some years ago, I read a poll which stated that the number one complaint people had about their neighborhood was, well, the neighbors. Sometimes these neighborly squabbles, they can get bad enough to end up in a civil court or, with some extreme cases, a police station. Still, it could be worse. In the old days, such disputes would often lead to a witchcraft trial. One of the most famous examples took place in 1582 in the small English village of St. Osyth. Two residents of this village, Grace Thurlow and Ursula Kemp, they'd been on bad terms for years. It was an ordinary example of two women rubbing each other the wrong way, the sort of thing you'd see in probably any community, until their simple mutual irritation turned into a grave legal matter indeed. The trouble began when Thurlow's young son, Davy, suffered a serious illness. One day, Kemp came by to try a little friendly white magic on the boy. She held his hand, intoned the words, "A good child, how thou art, Loden," and then left the house. Kemp returned a few moments later and repeated the ritual two more times, reassuring Thurlow that Davy would now soon get better. Fortunately, she proved to be correct. Well, at that time, Thurlow was about to have another child. Kemp apparently assumed, particularly after her success with young Davy, that Thurlow would ask her to assist at the birth. When she learned that Grace had secured the services of another woman, Ursula took this as a personal insult and wasted no time in marching over to the Thurlow residence to let her know what she thought of such ingratitude. In response, Thurlow made reference to the fact that she had recently been troubled by lameness. She hinted ominously that if it didn't go away soon, she would go to a magistrate and blame Kemp for her disability. Kemp offered her a deal. If Grace allowed her to attend Grace's upcoming labor, she would teach Grace a ritual that would cure her lameness. It's not recorded if Thurlow took her up on this witchy offer, but soon afterward she gave birth to a healthy daughter. Ursula offered to act as a wet nurse for the new baby, but Grace again refused her services, opting to nurse the child herself. 3 months later, the baby fell from her cradle, fatally breaking her neck. Ursula's response was one of the cruelest "I told you so"s on record. She sniffed that if Thurlow had just allowed her to nurse the child, the baby would have been alive still. You probably aren't surprised then to learn that this incident ended any pretense of friendship between the two women. Grace's lameness returned with a vengeance. Ursula told her that for the price of 12 pence, she would cure her ailment. Thurlow was in such pain, she agreed. Her lameness went away. All was well until a few weeks later when Kemp called on Thurlow to collect her payment. Thurlow had to tell her that she was simply too poor to scrape together such a sum. Kemp, infuriated at this welshing of their deal, told Grace in very unladylike language just what she thought of her, and stalked off. Immediately afterward, Thurlow's mysterious lameness came back. Worse still, the sickness of her only surviving child, Davy, returned. Thurlow had had enough. In February 1582, she went to the local justice of the peace, Brian Darcy, and accused Kemp of putting a curse on her and her children. Ursula seems to have been a very unpopular woman, and from what little is recorded of her, that's not really surprising. So other villagers saw this as an excellent opportunity for a bit of payback. On that same day, another woman, Agnes Leatherdale, went to the magistrate with her own charges against Kemp. She told Darcy that Ursula had asked her for some scouring sand. Kemp would, in exchange, dye her a pair of hose. However, Leatherdale, knowing her to be a naughty beast, refused. When she saw this sand being delivered to another household, Ursula was heard to mutter furious words to herself. Immediately afterward, one of Leatherdale's children fell gravely and mysteriously ill. Leatherdale went on to say that she visited a cunning woman to learn the cause of her child's sickness. She was probably unsurprised to be told that Ursula Kemp's witchcraft was responsible. When Leatherdale confronted Kemp with this news, Ursula just shrugged and denied everything. When Ursula was brought in for questioning, she told Darcy her side of the story. She claimed that some years back she herself had become lame. She visited a wise woman in the neighboring village of Wheely who informed Kemp that she had been bewitched. The woman gave Ursula a detailed cure for her ailment. It involved hog's dung and drinking ale infused with sage and St. John's wort. Having found that the treatment worked as advertised, she shared the formula with two other women who had also been witched into lameness with the same happy results. Darcy felt this was all well and good, but it did not address the point at issue. Did Kemp bewitch the Thurlow and Leatherdale households? The magistrate, in essence, offered Ursula a plea bargain: confess everything, and she would not be treated harshly. In response, Kemp burst into tears and sobbed out a tale that was probably even more than Darcy bargained for. She claimed that she had four familiars. Two, a black toad named Piggin and Tiffin, a white lamb, caused sickness to her enemies and their cattle. The other two, cats named Titty and Jack, brought the ultimate curse, death. These evil spirits were responsible for the sickness plaguing the Thurlow and Leatherdale children, as well as the death of Grace's baby. As if that wasn't damning enough, Kemp also volunteered that she sent Jack to murder her sister-in-law. Darcy brought in Grace and Agnes to confront this self-confessed murderer. Kemp hysterically begged their forgiveness, saying that in addition to her own crimes, she had arranged for another village woman, Alice Newman, to send her own familiars to torment Agnes's child and Grace. After a good night's sleep, it began to dawn on Ursula that perhaps she'd been a tad too chatty. The following day, she offered Darcy a slightly revised story. She said that a few months back, she and Alice Newman had quarreled. During the argument, Newman threatened to tell Darcy that Ursula was a witch. Despite this, the two patched up their differences, and by the time Alice left her house, carrying with her Ursula's four spirit pals in a pot, they were good friends again. Sometime later, after Ursula's fight with Grace Thurlow, she asked Alice to send Titty to cause Thurlow some grief. After Ursula got into a dispute with John Stratton and his wife, she had Alice sick Jack on them. The women would reward the spirits by allowing them to suck their blood like demonic mosquitoes. Naturally, Alice Newman was brought in to see what she had to say. She confirmed that she and Ursula had quarreled, and she did indeed call her friend a witch, but she stoutly denied the rest of Ursula's testimony, particularly the part about her possessing spirit contract killers. Darcy then pulled a stunt worthy of Lieutenant Columbo. He threatened to take away her spirits if she did not tell him the truth. Alice snapped that it was impossible for him to remove them. If she had any spirits to remove, that is. Oops. More villagers came forward to rat on the accused women. One William Hook told Darcy that he had once overheard Alice's husband, William, blame her for all his troubles. Hook added that dinnertime conversation between the Newmans often took an odd turn. Whenever Alice served meat, Hook would overhear William saying, "Dost thou not see?" which Hook took to mean that evil spirits were sharing their meal. Alice would reply that if William should see something, he should just give it some of their meat and it would leave. Meanwhile, Ursula had not finished incriminating her neighbors. She now said that other village women, Elizabeth Bennett, Alice Hunt and Agnes Glasscock, also kept spirits that they used to torment and sometimes kill anyone who happened to get on their bad sides. When Glasscock was hauled in for questioning, she stubbornly denied everything, even when a search of her body found suspicious spots in several places. When Ursula repeated her charges against Agnes to her face, Glasscock erupted with rage, calling Kemp a witch and a whore. She maintained that far from being a guilty party, she herself was a victim of Kemp's sorcery. Alice Hunt was not made of such stern stuff. She initially denied everything Ursula had said, but when she learned that she was to be arrested anyway, she, like Kemp, tried throwing herself on the mercy of the court. She went to Darcy and confessed that she did indeed have two spirits, Jack and Robin. They even warned her that Ursula would eventually grass on her. She added that her sister Margie Salmon also had a pair of spirits. The siblings had inherited them from her late mother, who was also a witch. After a bit of prodding, Margie acknowledged that her sister was telling the truth. It was beginning to look as if practically every woman in the Ossith kept killer spirits around the house in the way normal housewives kept pots and pans. Evidently, under the assumption that the more they talked, the easier Darcy would be on them, the accused women kept naming more and more of their neighbors. A widow named Joan Pesci, was said by Alice Hunt to be an even more skilled witch than Alice's mother had been. Henry and Cicely Sellis were alleged to have used their spirits to unleash various forms of mayhem on their neighbors. A constable from a nearby village accused one Alice Manfield for causing his cart to become stuck in the ground. She afterwards admitted to having four spirits. Alice Hunt's daughter and Ursula's son confirmed that their mothers were witches, providing previously unknown details about their diabolical doings. Kemp's own brother, Lawrence, joined in. He declared that his wife, who had long been on bad terms with Ursula, had been witched to death by his sister. Once Ursula began confessing, you couldn't shut her up. Every time she was examined, she gave her questioners new names of witches, new crimes they had committed. To hear Kemp tell it, virtually every death, every illness, every bit of ill fortune in and around St. Osyth was due to witchcraft. On March 29, 1582, all the accused women stood trial for various crimes at Chelmsford Assizes. Ursula and Elizabeth Bennett were found guilty of murder by witchcraft and sentenced to hang. The others were either acquitted or remanded. The latter often proved to be a death sentence. A number of the prisoners died in jail before they could be discharged. The Great St. Osyth witch hunt was finally over, although I assume it was quite some time before the village settled down to anything like normal life. I also wager that for a long time afterwards, the inhabitants were very careful about how they argued with each other. Thankfully, the days when you dealt with pesky neighbors via witch trials are extinct. Although, from what I've seen of next door, there are a lot of people who would like to see such tribunals make a comeback. Quick note, centuries after Ursula's execution, there was a darkly humorous footnote to her tragic story. In 1921, a St. Osyth resident unearthed in his garden a skeleton. As it was nowhere near any burial ground, it was presumed that these were the remains of Ursula Kemp, who, as a convicted witch, was buried in unconsecrated ground. After spending some years in a local museum, the bones were purchased by an eccentric artist named Robert Linkowitz, who proudly displayed the skeleton in his library, next to the embalmed body of a tramp. After Linkowitz died in 2002, the bones were finally given a formal examination by an archaeologist, and the study revealed the skeleton was that of a young man whose identity is fated to remain forever unknown. His longtime imposter was given a dignified burial in a local cemetery. The real location of the bones of Ursula Kemp, then, still remain a mystery. Here's some of the weird news that made it to the Weird Darkness website the past few days. You can find links to these stories by clicking on Weird News at WeirdDarkness.com. A homeowner who was shocked to discover a rag doll holding a spine-chilling note inside the wall of his new property is told how he finds the prank funny, but says his friends have urged him to sell and move out quickly. Jonathan Lewis has picked up the keys to his new home in Walton, Liverpool, and he decided to examine a hole under the stairs, which was boarded up. And it wasn't long before he came across a creepy rag doll dressed in pinstripe dress and bonnet, and an even creepier note. He explained, "So I'm underneath the stairs at the minute in the kitchen, and next to me here is what used to be a cupboard. It's just plasterboard, and there's a wire here, and I don't know where it goes. I thought I need to put a hole in here and try and figure out what it does. So I put the hole in, look inside, and that's when I found the doll." Mr. Lewis admitted the note was quite creepy and went on to read it aloud. The note attached to the doll said, "Dear reader / new homeowner, thank you for freeing me. My name is Emily. My original owners lived in this house in 1961. I didn't like them, so they had to go. All they did was sing and be merry. It was sickening. Stabbing was my choice of death for them, so I hope you have knives. Hope you sleep well." So what did he do with the doll? Well, he left it there. "I'm having a Halloween party in October," he said, "and she's going to be the star guest. I think I'll leave her in there for the time being and let a few people see her, and then eventually, when I do the kitchen up, I'll probably take it all down, and then I'll figure out what to do with her." And then he added, "My thoughts are either it's a joke or haunted dolls are real, so I'm going with it's a joke." And then he added, "Some of my friends found it hilarious, like me, but others said, get out of the house now, put it back on the market and sell it quickly. But I found it quite funny, to be honest." Pied and yellow-clubbed hoverflies spend their summers pollinating plants in the UK and Scandinavia then fly to the Mediterranean and North Africa in autumn. And scientists have discovered they use a time-compensated sun compass that keeps them on course throughout the day as the sun moves across the sky. Except for 2 days a year, that is, when they spend the entire day adjusting their internal clocks because of daylight saving time. The increasing amount of media interest in UFOs has resulted in an increase in membership for the Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON, across the country. Remember when we all just wanted to be a part of the Mickey Mouse Club? Retired NASA astronaut Bill Shepard told a congressional panel that the cracks in the ISS station are serious. There's probably many more that we don't know about, and this needs to be resolved before planning any future ISS projects, he said. What, NASA doesn't have duct tape? The Apiella nova is an ancient species of all-female ancient asexual beetle mites that have baffled scientists with their ability to reproduce and survive despite not having sex. But a new study has finally found their secret. The beetles are able to create genetically varied clones of themselves. One more step towards feminism getting rid of men entirely. If you've ever wondered how small-armed, big-legged, upright dinosaurs were able to run while maintaining their balance, a new study suggests that they wagged their huge tails to shift their weight back and forth to help them stay balanced and conserve energy. And they really got going when they saw you pulling in the driveway carrying a sack of freshly grilled brontosaurus burgers. Two three-strand bracelets featuring a total of 112 diamonds that once belonged to Marie Antoinette are up for auction, and it's estimated they'll sell for between $2 and $4 million, possibly more. The diamonds were going to be placed in her necklace instead of her bracelets, but it was decided that she just did not have the neck for that kind of thing. With the Martian atmosphere being primarily carbon dioxide, engineers at the University of Cincinnati used a carbon catalyst in a reactor to convert carbon dioxide into methane, a process that could turn Martian air into rocket fuel to power a spacecraft so it would not need to carry extra fuel for its return mission. I might also suggest having Taco Bell provide all the meals for the astronauts. Scientists at The Ohio State University have developed a new chemical process to turn stinky, toxic sewer gas into a clean-burning fuel by using iron sulfide to break it down and extract the hydrogen in a process called chemical looping. Housewives are already begging for a portable version to use on their husbands. Students at the National Polytechnic Institute of Cambodia spent $20,000 equipping a school chair with 8 propellers and used it to carry a pilot for 10 minutes over 0.6 miles to prove its potential use to fight fires on the upper floors of tall buildings. It's the most fun they've had using school furniture it's the only time they've had fun using school furniture. A protein named SHH, after the video game character Sonic the Hedgehog, may offer possible new ways to treat Parkinson's disease and improve the quality of life for patients by preventing involuntary tremors known as L-DOPA-induced dyskinesia, or LID. The tough part is getting Parkinson's patients to play Sonic the Hedgehog. A drone video taken by a man recording a canoeing fundraiser for Alzheimer's disease on Loch Ness might have captured actual footage of Nessie. "I didn't notice what I had picked up until others told me to watch out for it," he said. "It could be a trick of the light, but we can't be sure." I gotta admit, after watching the video a few times, the shadow or shape really does look like what we've come to expect to see for the Loch Ness Monster. Now, whether it's Nessie herself, I'll let you judge by watching the video yourself in the Weird News section at WeirdDarkness.com. Authorities in Croatia have identified a mystery woman found alone, injured, and suffering from amnesia on a remote island. But the mystery of how she got there remains. Authorities were baffled as to how the woman got there. The distance was not swimmable from the mainland, and only a miles-long hike through inhospitable terrain led to her location. She spoke perfect English but had no memory of how she got there or where she was from. A lack of ID and a cell phone only bolstered the mystery. Answers finally came when a U.S. researcher used facial recognition software to identify her as Daniela Adamkova, a Slovakian citizen living in Los Angeles. Friends of hers from the area soon confirmed that, yes, it was her. As it turned out, Adamkova had spent the week prior to her rescue traveling through Croatia by herself after turning off her cell phone and discarding its SIM card. Her fears were rooted in breaking COVID-19 quarantine protocols. "I'm pretty sure COVID-19 doesn't travel by mobile phone and SIM card." "Does it? Has it mutated into a computer virus variant now?" Why doesn't anybody tell me these things? A study found that on average, more microplastics were found in the feces of 6 1-year-old babies in New York City than in the feces of 10 adults. It's probably due to infants having a higher exposure to microplastics from child-safe plastic feeding utensils, pacifiers, sippy cups, and plastic toys. Even worse than finding plastic in your poop, having a job where your responsibility is looking for plastic in people's poop. I will never complain about my job ever again. The Space Force unveiled its new designs for service dress and work uniforms that have a unisex look designed with women in mind, with a dark blue wraparound jacket and diagonal buttons over a dress shirt and neckwear that some people think look like Star Trek uniforms. Let's just hope those uniforms don't come in red, if you know what I mean. Archaeologists recently discovered a medieval skeleton near Milan Cathedral showing signs that the person died by one of history's most painful deaths, being tortured on the wheel in a punishment that usually involved being tied to a cartwheel and being rolled or dropped repeatedly. Of course, we no longer use the wheel today. Forcing somebody to watch Bravo TV on cable is usually torture enough for any serial criminal. The British pest control company Rentokil Initial has developed a high-tech identification system that'll allow cameras at rat-infested sites to use facial identification technology to identify individual vermin to enable controllers to count the number of rats targeting a specific location before following them and catching them one by one. Now, I don't mean to sound like a jerk here, but if you have the ability to facially recognize a rat with a camera, couldn't you just equip that camera to kill the rat? It's right there in front of the camera. There you go. Problem solved. To test the effects of weightlessness on female astronauts, scientists in Toulouse, France are placing 20 women in bathtub-like containers covered in waterproof fabric, basically giant waterbeds, for 5 days as part of a dry immersion study that's already been conducted on males. See, now here I thought I had no skills other than talking, and yet now I find out I'm qualified for space travel? 5 days in a waterbed? That's a vacation for me. You can find links to these stories and others in the Weird News section at WeirdDarkness.com.
The Weird Darkness Radio Show's Sudden Death Overtime.